You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. We have a very special guest this week on the podcast. Jordan Bastion is off, I don't know what he's doing, beating his chest in the woods or something. He's on vacation. Jim Rosenhaus of the Indians Radio Network is joining us in his stead. And Rosie, first of all, thanks for coming on. Thanks for partaking in this. I always like the ability to, you know, turn the tables on you, ask you some questions. It's always fun for me.
Anytime, Anthony, anytime.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. I mean, the Tribe enters the week, eight games under, nine games back. You know, you look at this Central Division, and the Tigers and Royals are what they are, and the Twins are better than people gave them credit for going into the year. The White Sox are finally making the kind of move people expect them to make, getting back to 500 over the weekend and winning five in a row. So you wonder about this division slipping away from the Indians. What's your take on all of that? Does this club have a move in them, do you think?
Well, I think it's safe to say that it's no longer early because of the way that the Indians have struggled and then also the way the other teams have played. And I think it's pretty clear, at least through the first month and a half, that the Royals and Tigers are going to be contended with all season long. I think most people figured that going into the season, although the Royals probably didn't get as much attention as they deserved, considering they were a World Series team a year ago. But certainly for the Indians, they've got to get rolling. I mean, Anthony, over the weekend, they won two straight against Texas. First time they'd won even two in a row since the first series of the season. So if they want to be serious about getting back in it, they really need to get on some type of roll, that 8 out of 10, win four straight, something like that, which just hasn't been even remotely close so far this season.
Yeah, it's been a frustrating club in that sense because it's never been just one thing holding them back. There's been moments of brilliance from this pitching staff, and there's been moments of brilliance from this offense as well, but it's never really come together consistently. And the other problem, Rosie, is they can only have so many series in the state of Texas, right? There's only
yeah.
Two series wins are in that state. They gotta find a way to get more games there. But on the encouraging side, and Bastion and I have talked about this in previous podcasts, but it's just the numbers keep coming for Jason Kipnis since that move to the leadoff spot. And in the month of May, you got a 1.396 OPS. Second only to Bryce Harper, who's just gone crazy in D.C. What do you make of the way he's acclimated himself to that leadoff role? And have you seen a difference in his at-bats as a function of being in that spot?
You know, it's interesting because clearly he's taken more pitches, I think, and worked longer at-bats since he's been there. But he's brought up a great point. He said, and this is for any leadoff hitter, really the only guarantee of leading off an inning is to start the ball game. Or the bottom of the first if you're home. So what it has done, though, is it's put him in that mindset to try and reach base, try and have an at-bat where he can see a lot of pitches and maybe be slightly more patient. But he did say after a big game Saturday night that he really felt that things were progressing nicely before he was moved into the leadoff spot. The numbers didn't necessarily indicate that. But he felt that he was coming along and felt so much better than a year ago. He's healthy, which is huge. That was not the case last season. So even though the numbers didn't indicate it, he felt he was having good at-bats. And so some of it is a coincidence, but he also admitted that he is seeing more pitches per at-bat and being a little bit more patient at the plate, and it seems to have helped.
This has to be such a weight off his shoulders because – you know, he signs a big contract before last season, then he has just a miserable year physically and performance-wise. So, you know, to get off to this kind of a start and kind of reestablish himself as one of the more productive American League second basemen, which is the guy they, you know, they hope to get when they did do that extension, that has to be a tremendous relief for him and for them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of things go into a bad year just like a lot of things go into a good year, and I think it was a combination last year. He got hurt, and I don't know that he'll come out and say it, but I think he wanted to come back maybe sooner than he should have, and play through the tail end of that injury because of the contract. He felt that he owed it to this ball club to try and go out there and give them what he had. And what I think what he found out is it wasn't 100%. And he was trying to swing with an oblique issue that was hampering his swing, no question, but he felt good enough where he could play. It wasn't a situation where he couldn't play at all. So I'm sure that had to come into play. The guy's got a lot of pride, and the team was trying to hang in there in the pennant race last year, and he thought he could help even if he wasn't 100%. But what happened was it just led to a dreadful season at the plate by his standards.
And looking, Rosie, at the his double play mate there up the middle, that's been the one, not the one, but it has been a consistent source of frustration this year. The shortstop play hasn't been what you'd expect from Jose Ramirez. But Mike Avilas is rejoining the team in Chicago this week, and that seems to relieve some pressure there, too, for Terry Francona. Gives him another option at the big league level. Avilas, of course, has just an awful situation going on off the field with his daughter battling leukemia. Certainly thoughts and prayers go out to them, but from a baseball standpoint, he helped his club tremendously the last couple of years, and it seems like they need him right now at that shortstop spot.
Yeah, you know, obviously you cannot control certain things that happens in life, and sometimes in baseball we get so locked into that day-to-day that you forget that there's life things going on. And it certainly appears as if he'll be back this week, if not today. And I think that'll be a boost just to take some of the pressure off Ramirez, because I think you could see a young player pressing in Jose Ramirez and not necessarily just playing free and easy like he was the last couple of months of last year. When you come up, you're hot, playing well in the minor leagues, and you just continue that in the big leagues, it's another animal to get started in a new season with expectations coming out as the opening day shortstop. And he just hasn't had the consistency that the Indians need there. So we'll see. We'll see how much Mike Avilas can play. I know he's been working out back home over the weekend at Progressive Field. So I know the Indians would love to get him back in there quickly and play a lot, but it's going to be up to him and see what kind of frame of mind he is in, because obviously he's been through a lot.
Rosie, I don't know where that Corey Kluber performance last week against the Cardinals ranks for you in terms of games you called, but what are you going to take away from having watched that 18 strikeout performance? And I guess, what are you going to tell your grandkids about from that one?
You know, one of the best I've ever seen, no question. And in terms of in the major leagues, not having seen a no-hitter yet in the major leagues, it certainly would rank right up there with that. One hit over eight innings with 18 strikeouts. And I thought what made it really neat was it happened on a day where they unveiled a Bob Feller exhibit at the ballpark back home. And Bob's widow, Ann Feller, was there, and his two sons were there. And that was pretty neat that here Kluber put this Bob Feller-like game together on that night. And I thought that just kind of added to what was a dominant performance. Just talking to him the next day, he felt he was close before that, and I know the numbers haven't necessarily indicated that. But again, it points out to that fine line. Although you talk to his catcher, Roberto Perez, Mickey Callaway, the stuff was better. The breaking ball was just absolutely dominant, and the Cardinals, a pretty good hitting team, could not do much with it.
Yeah, and talking to Kluber before and after that start, the relationship with Roberto Perez, he felt it was improving, and he felt they had made some changes and had some good dialogue about how to adjust within starts, and then he felt they were very much on the same page that night. That's pretty obvious watching the way things played out. But, of course, the encouraging thing for the Indians is Yan Gomes out on his rehab assignment now and inching closer to a return. And you look at this, Rosie, and again, we don't know if the Indians have a big run in them, given what we've seen so far, but you have to imagine if there is a run here to be had, Yan Gomes would be a big part of that, offensively and defensively.
No question, because I think the starting rotation, which was expected to really anchor this team and can certainly help a team get on a roll when you have some depth and some of the quality that they have, your catcher's a big component of that. And Jan Gomes clearly was a big component of the Indians' starting rotation being so strong a year ago. That's a huge part of his game. It's easy to point to the Silver Slugger and talk about what he does offensively, but the way he calls games, how he commands a game from behind the plate, you talk about it with the Cardinals and Yadier Molina, and there's several others in the big leagues that have that type of impact, and certainly he is that type of catcher for the Indians. So, yeah, the timing couldn't be better. It sure seems like he'll be back at some point, maybe even before the Indians return home on Friday, and that'll be a huge boost. And I think just morale-wise for this team, he means a lot. He's taken a leadership role in that clubhouse, and it'll make a difference.
Absolutely. Well, Rosie, now that you're in Chicago, so tell the people, what do you get into in Chicago? What are your go-to spots in Chicago?
Well, we stay not far from Rush Street, and if you can't find something to eat or drink on that street, you're not trying. So there's just a world of possibilities, and I think the beauty of it is we got in about 9:30, 10 o'clock last night from Texas, and if you're hungry, and in some places you go to, it's hard to find a place to get a good bite to eat at that hour, but golly, on a Sunday night in Chicago, the streets were packed, and there actually were wait times at some of the, you know, the deep dish pizza places and some of the other spots. So if you don't come out of here weighing a little bit more than when you came in, you're not trying.
You're not doing it right. Chicagoans know how to eat. And they know how to feed visitors. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I want to thank Jim Rosenhaus for pitching in here this week, and thank you all for tuning in once again. This has been MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.